Hello, what have we here?
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 6. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about the droids. As always, I'm Mikey B, joined by my co-host Danya.
Hey guys!
And we have a very special guest, Mikal. I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's Mikal. No problem.
Mikal. Sorry, I'm going to mess that up the entire time.
But it's totally cool.
But I will try, I promise. If you guys want to get involved with the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at rradiopodcast, leave a comment on our Facebook, or send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net. Or just leave a comment on this post when it goes up live on hypable.com. So, getting started, every week we have our new hosts who have not been on tell us a little about Star Wars. Or at least your fandom with Star Wars, or how you love Star Wars, or how you got into it. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your background with Star Wars, Mikal?
Yeah, sure. I have a complicated history with Star Wars, I guess. I got into it when I was 11 or 12, I think, and when The Phantom Menace was coming out. But I knew about it, like, most of my life. Like, my dad was a big Star Wars fan, and he had, like, the one of the special edition VHS sets, like, on our shelf, like, for my whole life, and they would terrify me because, like, I was an easily scared kid, and it was like Yoda and a stormtrooper and Vader, and they all looked really freaky to me. So I always thought that Star Wars was like the scary thing until, like, I kind of distinctly remember reading an article in, like, Newsweek for Kids or Time for Kids or one of those when The Phantom Menace was coming out about, like, what Star Wars was. And so one night at dinner, I was like, okay, so Dad, like, what is Star Wars about? And then he told me and my sister the entire story of, I think, the whole first trilogy, like, told it to us orally. And then we sat down and watched the movies, and my little brothers got into it. We went to see Phantom Menace as a family, and I was young, so I loved it. And, like, it just kind of went from there. And there were a couple of years where I was really obsessed with Star Wars. And then, like, I kind of got into other things, and, you know, like, more into Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings became a thing, and I just kind of moved away from Star Wars / grew up and wasn't so keen on the prequels anymore. And I was really not in a relationship at all with Star Wars until, like, the second I finished watching the first trailer for the first, like, little 88-second trailer for Force Awakens, and, like, it was an awakening. It's like such a silly thing to say, but it was so true. And yeah, and like in that past year, I started covering Rebels for Hypable and just kind of let myself get, you know, swept back into the galaxy far, far away. And it's so good to be back.
Oh, I can understand that. That's awesome. When you're telling the story here, I just started thinking back to, like, the Family Guy episode when Peter, you know, power goes out and Peter tells the story of A New Hope to the family.
Yeah.
Just sitting around. I'm like, your dad's like Peter Griffin telling Star Wars story.
It was really funny.
Yeah,
because he was, like, trying to explain certain things that are, like, I guess hard to explain if you haven't seen it, like what 3PO and R2 are like. And so my dad was like, so 3PO doesn't, R2 doesn't talk. You know, he, like, beeps, but you still understand what he's saying. And my sister is a little younger than I am, and she had, like, a lot of trouble getting that. And I was like, I remember suggesting, like, what he would say. And it's not like that at all. But it was so funny just the way the story was, like, communicated in that way.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like, that sounds like an amazing experience to get, you know, introduce the Star Wars that way. So that's awesome. I'm glad that we have someone who's been a lifelong fan. And I can understand kind of going away from it. I was definitely big into Harry Potter myself, too. But Star Wars has always been kind of a love for me. I have Yoda tattooed on my leg, so it's been a constant reminder for me. Well, we're going to start off by talking about some news. And we have some to me, this is, like, super exciting news because I feel like I'm going to spend way too much time doing this. Star Wars virtual reality, guys. Did you guys watch the trailer for it? The trials on Tatooine at all?
I did. Pretty much as soon as it dropped, I watched it. It, like, showed up on YouTube, and I was at work, and I watched it on mute because I shouldn't really be watching Star Wars videos at my desk in the office at work. it looks really cool. Like, this is the kind of thing that I hope the parks will maybe do a little bit when the Star Wars parks open, like, actually being able to live and breathe Star Wars. It's so cool. But I have a really funny sort of relationship with, like, virtual reality stuff. My friend Scott has the Oculus Rift kind of thing.
Yeah, the VR from Oculus Rift.
Yeah, and I got a little bit motion sick when I was playing... What was I playing? I was playing Subnautica with that. And that's all underwater, and you, like, swim around, and you catch fish, and you build stuff, and you build bases, and whatever. But I got a little bit motion sick with it. So I'm a little bit worried that when this does actually drop, and I really want to try it out because it looks amazing, I might not actually be able to play it because I get really motion sick when I do virtual reality stuff, or any of the virtual reality stuff that I've tried. I can't play it for very long.
Yeah, it looks really cool. My only concern is I hope it's not kind of like... So, when the... If you guys remember the game Star Wars The Force Unleashed, you know, the game between, like, Vader's Secret Apprentice. I specifically bought the version on Wii because, like, the nunchuck is, you know, the Wii mode and nunchuck are going to be your lightsaber. And I'm like, this is going to be really cool. Well, it turned out to be just kind of flapping your arms around, which wasn't as cool. You know, the game is fun, but, you know, like, I was all like, all right, I'm going to play lightsaber. You know, it just didn't happen. It made me a little sad. It was a fun game overall. But, so this is interesting because the trailer isn't on StarWars.com. They talk about it, but apparently the trailer leaked, and we'll have a link to it. But it's supposed to be released on the HTC Vive, which is coming out soon. And this is a VR experiment from Industrial Light and Magic's, what is it, ILM X-Lab. So they should be doing a lot more, and there's a thing talking about it, you know, a whole thing talking about how they've been trying this, and I feel like this whole ILM X-Lab is really designed for a lot of the Disneyland stuff, because they're going to be doing VR. Remember, they said they were going to be flying the Millennium Falcon, so I almost feel like we'll see a lot more VR, not only at home with these things, but hopefully in the parks, too.
Yeah, I would like to see something in the parks, especially with, like, this Millennium Falcon experience ride, because if it's a lot more immersive, that would be a lot of fun. Because I don't know, I want to live in Star Wars. That would be exciting.
I agree. Although I will say, VR kind of freaks me out sometimes. There's a anime GIF going around, at least I saw on Reddit a couple times, where someone's using the Oculus Rift and they're trying to go through a hole in the ground, and they hit their head 3 times on the floor until they realize, like, they can't actually go through that hole because it's not really there in real life.
I feel
like that's gonna be me. Like, I'm gonna be running full speed and I'm gonna hit, like, a wall, you know, but I'll be like, it's all right, I can cut it open with my lightsaber, and obviously it doesn't happen in real life. If only. But yeah, so I'm hoping there's some type of immersion thing, like kind of like a treadmill or something like that you walk on, so you're actually walking, you know. I don't know, I really hope it'd be, like, super immersive. Yes, you can laugh at me.
I'm just imagining Disney setting up treadmills and using people running on treadmills to power part of the park.
Wow. That's like the hamster wheel type thing, you know.
But... like dystopia Disney.
Wow.
It would totally happen. I mean...
It could. But also, beyond just the Star Wars Trial of Tatooine, the VR experience, StarWars.com also has additional information about Star Wars Battlefront on PlayStation VR that's coming in. There's not really a lot of information about it. It just says that it's going to be coming soon, so we'll see more virtual reality stuff. And I'm assuming because they're tying it to Battlefront, it's probably going to be essentially a way to play the game, or even just enter into some of those worlds, because Battlefront is done so well by DICE. So it says stay tuned to StarWars.com for more on Star Wars Battlefront VR. So that's kind of cool too.
Yeah, it looks like they're gonna potentially expand this out into, like, different things, especially if ILM is working on a lot of this. I mean, that's just another branch of them, so it makes a lot of sense if they are going to, like, fully push a lot of this, so...
Well, especially since, like, the Battlefront, the worlds are already, you know, at least the maps and everything are already 3D rendered and stuff like that. They just have to insert a way to interact with it, so it seems like a no-brainer for them to be able to take that property and activate it, or make it so you can do VR in it, too.
Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, they just need to be able to make it interactive.
It's like, yeah, it's like just a couple lines of code, you know, like you see, you know, in movies you see hackers just go click, 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 and they're done. So, you know, it's kind of the same thing, right?
Yeah, totally the same thing.
I'm going to put it out there that I do not believe that actually is what happens. Just so everyone knows, like, I can understand, but no.
They just have to flip the switch, right? That's totally how it works.
It's like a checkbox. Click. Anyway... Moving on to the next bit of news, we have a young Han Solo shortlist has been narrowed down even further. That's on Hypeable.com.
So the shortlist that we originally got for the Han Solo movie did originally include people like Miles Teller and Ansel Elgort and all of those. And thankfully, they seem to have cut those two from the list because I just kind of looked at it and went, no. When they basically had those guys, I was like, look, just don't bother. They have, like, narrowed it down to three actors, but there's, like, rumors that there may be a couple more that they're screen testing as well, but they can't get the names of them because Disney. So the couple that it's down to is Taron Egerton, who you may know as Eggsy from Kingsman. Yeah, he's also in Eddie the Eagle right now, which I haven't had a chance to go and watch, but yeah, I did watch Kingsman. So, Jack Rayner is also on this shortlist. He was in Transformers Age of Extinction, which, you know, no worries if you didn't see that. I don't blame you.
Michael Bay.
You said that too gently. It's Michael Bay.
You just need to add an explosion at the end of it.
Yeah. And then Alden Ehrenreich, I think is how you say his name. He was in Beautiful Creatures, and he's currently in Hail Caesar, which I've only been hearing amazing things about his role in Hail Caesar from, like, everything that I've read. So... I mean, all around, they're pretty good actors. I don't have major opinions one way or another for most of these because everyone should know my opinions from last week, which is that I really do think Anthony Ingruber is probably, like, the closest we're ever going to get to a young Harrison Ford ever in anything. But, if I was to place my bets on anyone getting this, I would say it's a 50-50 toss-up between Alden Ehrenreich and Taron Egerton. And if I was to put my weight behind one of them, I'll go with Taron just because he's my homeboy. He's from Wales. He's from Aberystwyth. So you gotta throw your weight behind them sometimes.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is I feel like this is kind of the same route as what they did with the new characters in Force Awakens. You know, all three of them have done stuff, but haven't done anything to really break out, if you will. So I will be admit I'm not as familiar with all three of them. I've looked all their profiles up on IMDb, flipped through them, but I haven't really seen much. I did see, you know, Kingsman, so I'm a little bit more familiar there. With Taron, but for the most part, I'm sure they're all going to be great. I just hopefully, my biggest thing concern would be is because they are stepping into a role that's existing, you know, whereas John Boyega and Daisy just were able to step in and create those characters as their own. And of course, I fell in love with them, and I'm sure most people did. They're falling into playing Han Solo. So I'm hoping that they have something, you know, that whatever they see when they, you know, cast it, hopefully they have the ability to kind of channel that. Because like you said last week when I watched the, you know, video from Anthony, it definitely, you channeled Han Solo in those lines and everything that he did.
I have a difficulty, like, forming a real opinion about this because I don't want them to make this movie. So I'm kind of like very vanilla on the whole thing. Yeah, I'm a big proponent of, you know, mysterious parts of stories remaining mysterious and us and stories being stronger if you don't know everything, every detail. And I firmly believe that making these movies, because there's going to be more than one, is going to take a significant amount of the magic out of Han Solo and his life. And, you know, because, I mean, maybe this is just my, like, personal, I mean, it is just my personal perspective on it, but, like, I don't think it's necessary, you know? I don't think it's interesting, and I don't think it's creative either, you know? I think that Star Wars has to be really careful with these, like, extra movies that they're making, and a Han Solo movie is just so obvious and so theoretically easy, but in practice, I mean, I can't imagine how they would like do this well and like not make it just like a bucket full of cliches and being like, and every other word is Kessel Run. And, you know, I mean, I should have more faith in them because obviously they're very creative and smart people. I feel like this is just such a wrong-headed idea that like, why are we looking backwards so specifically? You know, why can't we do, you know, a Knights of the Old Republic thing, or like, I don't know. Star Wars stories are tricky in general, again, because of my reluctance to tell every single part of everything ever. But like, I just feel like there's better stories to do that don't involve recreating a massive chunk of character. Like, that's, it's part of why I'm so happy that like Dumbledore is not going to be in Fantastic Beasts or anything. Like, I don't need that. I want this new individual, like, self-contained story. And that's not what I'm getting with Star Wars. Sorry to be a massive down.
No. I get that. I totally get that. I'll be honest. Like, I was totally against a Han Solo movie when I first heard about it. But the more and more I thought about it, it definitely adds a lot of possibilities to story-wise. They can start to highlight certain characters that I think would do well in a solo movie, specifically like a Boba Fett type movie. Now, I think everyone's like, oh, I want a Boba Fett movie, but this would be a great place to introduce Boba Fett a little further. I still would love to see this as a story where like Han and Chewie become the friends they are, and I'd love to see like interactions with other people we know in the universe. Like I was mentioning, like I would love to be it to have like a high stakes sabacc game where Han actually wins the Falcon, you know, from Lando. Like I would love to see that. You see a young Lando Calrissian in there, a game, and then something goes wrong. You know, it'd just be, I would love to see something like that. Do I need a whole bunch of backstory on all that? Maybe not, but I definitely think there's a, you know, some possibilities of it being good. But I think for the first kind of character type movie, I think it is a safe one for them to choose, because there's going to be a lot of people interested in it just because it's Han Solo. Then if they pick someone a little bit more out there, it's kind of like when you think of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Ant-Man, it was not one of the first films they did, even though he was a, you know, he's part of the Avengers and everything, and he's actually the one who did Ultron, but you know, they took a while to get to that character, to reintroduce him into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They kind of stuck with their bigger characters first to introduce people to that whole universe. And I think that's kind of what they're trying to do here. At least that's what I hope they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, you have like 30 years of history instead of like, you know, 5 with Marvel. Like Marvel getting backstory is great, but it's like something within recent memory that you've connected. Like, every time we like fill in more and more details about the Star Wars backstory, I mean, it's never going to add up perfectly, you know, like the original trilogy doesn't add up perfectly. You know, there's no reason why Obi-Wan doesn't actually spill the beans and tell Luke at least a significantly larger chunk of the truth than he does, you know? So I don't know. I just feel like it's kind of necessarily imperfect. Like I'd be better off, actually. I'd prefer a Boba Fett movie, even though I don't care at all about Boba Fett, because it's less it's less central to the mythology and the character development of Star Wars. You know what I mean?
No, I agree. And like you said, when you mentioned an Old Republic one, I'd love to have like a Darth Bane movie or even like a Revan film and kind of explore that entire time period too. But we can only wait and see if they decide to add any of that stuff in here. Because as it is now, they've alluded to a lot of those characters and those things in like the Clone Wars, you know, series, in Rebels kind of, and different things, but we haven't really seen any of it be part of canon yet. So we'll see what they end up doing with some of that content that was created. As it is, like they even talked about possibly being a Grand Admiral Thrawn in Rogue One. So they have, instead of Tarkin, it being possibly Grand Admiral Thrawn. So they introduced a character from the books into the movies. So it could be something where, like I said, I think this is just a safe character that they're focusing on for this first movie.
It is, but it is and it isn't a safe character, because the problem with tackling a Han Solo movie, and I was talking to Karen, another staffer on Hyperball, about this today, is that Harrison Ford so fully embodied that role and made it his own, and it's so iconic to him that it's going to be really difficult for people to be able to separate that from whoever is going to be taking over the role as a young Han Solo. So, I mean, I don't even necessarily think it's a completely safe choice, because this could go so very, very wrong on them, because whoever takes on this role is going to have an incredibly difficult task ahead of them to be able to embody a character that is already defined. Like, we already know quite a lot about Han Solo already. We know his mannerisms, we know how he interacts with other characters, we know his speech patterns, we know a lot about his body language. Having someone have to embody all of that in an earlier film, like, that's going to be incredibly difficult. And also finding a story that both doesn't contradict what's already in any of the films, so in the original trilogy or in The Force Awakens, and also keeping it really interesting and different and not kind of a giant cliche, like, that's going to be really hard for them to do. So I honestly don't think they have an easy sell here other than it just being Han Solo the name. I think this film, all in, from what I've seen fan reaction in like comments and stuff, is the one that people are most worried about, because it's the most difficult one for them to get right. Because like Michal was saying, like, there's so much about Han's story before A New Hope that is more interesting when we don't know everything. And I think if they kept it to something like Han winning the Falcon from Lando and isolating it down to that story specifically and leaving it at that and not going with, like, probably a trilogy of Han Solo movies, I think that would work, because we already know a little bit of how that went down from conversations between Han and Lando and, like, their relationship with each other in the original trilogy. So isolating it down to something like that could mean that we're just expanding a little bit on something we already know, and we're not taking away that mysticism for other parts of Han's past that, you know, are actually fine where they are. It's great to have that speculation and kind of that discussion open where you can fill in the blanks yourself and have a lot of fun kind of theorizing about stuff. But when you start taking a lot of that away, I don't know. It for me, this isn't as straightforward and easy film to make as they may think it is. I think this may actually be their hardest sell out of, like, the anthology films, because for me, the one that I'm most excited about and I will continue to be most excited about is Rogue One, just because it's fascinating to have this set out to find out how they got the plans for the Death Star in the first place. And it's all characters that we we theoretically don't know anything about. So that's what's exciting about it to me, is that it's a whole new set of characters and motivations and a vague thread of a story that links back into the bigger picture story of what we already know. But this is, it's very, very dangerous territory that they're stepping into that could go incredibly wrong.
Yeah, I agree to an extent. Like, the biggest thing is when it comes to, like, someone taking over that role, I would say we have an example of someone stepping into someone else's role. A good example is Ewan McGregor stepping into the Obi-Wan Kenobi role. And even just Ian McDiarmid stepping into his own role of the Emperor. Because those characters were already established, they had something to base those characters on. And I remember back seeing, you know, the Phantom Menace stuff, that he watched a lot of the original trilogy over and over again to see how Obi-Wan act, to learn some of the mannerisms, but to take, you know, he was an older man, like, what, how would he act as a someone who's younger to get to that point? And I would say, I feel like Ewan McGregor's performance as Obi-Wan Kenobi in the prequel trilogy is probably one of the best performances in the trilogy. I don't know if many people would argue with me against that, but I think, you know, someone who stepped in to do a young Han Solo could do that. I agree, it's definitely something where it's a risk to an extent, but I feel like it's almost a calculated risk, because I feel like whoever has it has a bunch of content to be able to base their character, the development of that character on. But I don't want them to explore too much. And I agree, I like having some of it be unknown, and we can deal with it in comics and in books and all that fun stuff. But I definitely think just a small section, and hopefully this doesn't become like three films, like you were saying.
I thought they've said that they're like thinking about that already. I mean, I don't know. It's not a bad argument, obviously. Like, yeah, I completely agree. Ewan McGregor, aside from just being Ewan McGregor, is one of the best parts of the prequel trilogy. I mean, he would be just by standing there, but, like, you know. But at the same time, I mean, Obi-Wan is such a small part of the original trilogy. Like, he is thematically very resonant, but his screen time is minimal. And it's just not, like, you know, I mean,
that Harrison Ford has for Han Solo.
Exactly. You know, it's not as iconic. It's not as, it's just, you know, basically Obi-Wan's emotional reactions are really not a thing in the movie. Like, they're extremely subtle, and, like, you know, there's once or twice where, like, we get a glimpse of what he's feeling, even when he's a Force ghost, however that happens, but, like, it's not crucial, whereas Harrison Ford is so inherently Han Solo and is, you know, is so tied to that relationship with Leia. I don't know, look, I obviously it's happening anyway. I guess this is just part of my general frustration with, like, something that I've actually found a little bit in Star Wars fandom, which is that kind of desire to, like, know everything and, like, uncover all these secrets and have, like I went to the J.J. Abrams event at New Jersey Performing Arts Center in November, where he was talking to Stephen Colbert, and, like, somebody asked a question who his favorite alien was, and he's like, I don't remember his name, but there's probably a novel written about him. And I was like, yes, that's totally true, because for whatever reason, I mean, obviously it comes from a good place. It comes from love and enthusiasm. But I'm of the school that stories need dark, unexplored spaces. And, you know, especially prominent characters like this, it's fundamental. I mean, you don't know everything about anyone. And I think that for the most part, characters should work the same way. So that's just my philosophical argument with the Han Solo movie.
It's very valid. Like I said, I don't know. It's for the Han Solo shortlist, I wish they would give us more, but I think that's kind of the Star Wars mentality with everything, because you said there is so much Star Wars. I think that's probably reasons why I love Star Wars so much, is I have this addictive personality where it's like once I latched onto it, it's like I started reading everything and anything I could get my hands on when I was younger. And even still now, it's like, ooh, what do I have now to look up for Star Wars? So we'll see how it plays out, and I'm sure we'll get more information on that, and hopefully we'll get some information on Rogue One to, you know, satiate my need to know more about the different things before A New Hope.
Yeah, where is that trailer already, though? Like, come on.
Yeah, it's gonna come eventually. If the leaked trailer stuff was true, we might see it with Batman versus Superman. If not, we'll see it hopefully with Civil War. Hopefully by then.
Yeah, everyone laughed at me when I made that joke that we wouldn't see anything until Star Wars Celebration. Everyone laughed at me on the first podcast when I said that. You watch it turn out to be true.
Well, if there is, then I fully expect cell phone videos sent to me, immediately as you watch it.
Oh my god, you think I'd, risk the wrath of, I don't know, Disney, throwing me out? Oh my god.
You'll be there on a media... on a media pass, they won't throw you out. You don't mind sharing it with anyone but me and the rest of our listeners.
The good thing about Star Wars is that they don't keep those things secret, which I love. It's immediately online.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, they announce it, but they don't show it, though. Like, the original trailer from last celebration of Rogue One never officially went online. There were some pictures.
That's true.
And like I said, you can still find cell phone video of it on some of the other sites, Daily Motion. hint, hint, nudge, nudge, look. Hopefully we'll see it before that celebration. If not, I kind of want to see it soon. Anyway, moving on, we also got a trailer for a behind-the-scenes documentary coming up with The Force Awakens called The Secrets of The Force Awakens. The trailer's pretty good. Here's the thing, I have the Blu-ray set of the original trilogy, or of all six films, when it first came out on Blu-ray, and I watched those two Blu-ray discs of extras of all the documentary stuff. So I'm a fan of, all the extras that come with this, so I'm excited to kind of devour all the extra stuff that comes with The Force Awakens. I'll probably make a night of it, watch the movie, then all the extras, and, 6 hours later, I'll be like, okay, now it's time for bed. But what do you guys think about it?
I didn't see the trailer because I'm kind of saving it, and it's funny because I'm actually not really that interested in the behind the scenes stuff from the early movies or the prequels or anything like that. But I'm super excited for this. I ordered the Target version, which is the one with an extra 20 minutes on the weapons. And I'm like, what am I doing as I'm entering my credit card information? But I'm really excited. I think, I don't know, there's something about, I guess, knowing the cast and following them, in this social media way that we do, which was similar, I guess. I did this for Lord of the Rings. I have the extended editions and kind of in a way think that they make a better entertainment than the movies themselves, the extra discs. Yeah, this one just I'm super excited for.
I agree completely. I think it's also one of those things we're living through this moment in time. Whether you look back at Star Wars in 50 years and oh, that was, that franchise did so much for cinema and it was a phenomenon and it's still going, but we're going through this experience together with everyone. So I'm excited to learn more about that backstage footage and everything. Just to, I follow, John Boyega and Daisy Ridley on Instagram and Facebook, mm-hmm. and Twitter and all that. It's I love getting those little snippets, just because it's so fun to be able to see, hey, these are real people who are playing out these characters that I've fallen in love with,
Right, and so much of the original stuff I feel is retrospective, It's this happened, but kind of, I guess, because, wow. Sorry, can you hear that thunder?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. Because it was made in the 70s and DVD extras weren't a thing in the 70s, it's all a little bit backward looking, I think, whereas this is what it was like now to make this movie. And, I don't know. I'm super excited. And right. I love the whole cast so much that I can't wait to just look at them talk.
Yeah, I'll take that. Some of my favorite extras from the original trilogy and stuff like that, at least on the Blu-ray release, was the one of the 501st at the... what do you call it, Rose Parade in L.A., just because I lived in L.A., and I was actually at that Rose Parade when they honored George Lucas for it, so I remember waking up at 3 a.m. to go line up and sit out there with a blanket, and I saw, 50 stormtroopers walking down, and it was just a big old news thing, because wow, they actually have an army of stormtroopers for Star Wars. I'm yes, it was the 501st, I was just so excited, and seeing the documentary on that, even though it wasn't related to, it was a bonus feature in the Blu-ray, even though it's not related to the movies, like that sort of thing always has had me interesting because I'm like, I'm living through that. I was there, you know, I was part of that. So I'm excited to see like this cinematic journey of how it kind of came together and all the new additions in the cast and how they interact, like not on camera as their characters. So I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely excited. But I'm like super into seeing how films come together behind the scenes. Like I absolutely love that sort of thing. There was a little like step by step kind of how they went from like, or what they used as the visual effects that came out. Not that long after the film came out, actually, and that was really interesting to see as well, like, what was practical effects and what they did visual effects on top of, and that was really, really cool. But then stuff like this is seriously interesting to me. And, yeah, I guess seeing, like, all of the old and new cast coming together and just seeing them interacting out of character, like, that's going to be really nice, because we know that they have such a great relationship from everything that we've seen in like the press tours and them still interacting on like social media and how they talk about each other in like interviews and stuff. Like I'm so looking forward to seeing how this all came together. And again, as much as I can possibly get about this movie is great.
Yeah, although it's funny, every time I watch behind the scenes stuff, happened for Lord of the Rings, happened for everything, I always come away thinking, wow, actors get way too much credit, you know, like they just they basically stand there, you know, while thousands of people are moving around them creating everything. And believe me, I love Daisy, I love John, I love Oscar Isaac, I love Adam Driver, like nothing against them, but it's really just like it kind of makes your jaw drop how many people are involved and then like just these very few kind of get credit for it, you know? Like, I always feel like you should have, like, the on-camera interviews with, like, you know, the grips and the costume designers, assistants, and, like, you know, all those little people behind the scenes that kind of don't get any acclaim.
Yeah. Well,
I agree completely.
Yeah, when I went to film school, my background was post-production, and
cares about you.
Exactly, right? You know, I know how it is. And you know, and here's the thing is, on some of those things, like, you know, when you're talking about grips and costume designers, there are interviews with them. There are a lot of things, but they're usually based in, like, trade. Like, there was an article that came out a month ago, maybe, in one of my edit blogs that I read, and it was all about, you know, talking about editing The Force Awakens. Like, it went into good detail with, you know, screenshots and different things. If I can find it, I'll link it in here. But it's, you know, more talks about the technical aspect of it, of how they shot on film, the digitization of that, you know, how dailies went, because it's a different post-production workflow than what we've moved into in the last 5 years. So there's are those things, but I always laugh because, you know, I've done a couple movies, you know, you can look me up on IMDb, and I was on, you know, I was an editor and post-production coordinator on a children's show for Nickelodeon, so I have that background until I moved to Kentucky. But it was one of those things where, you know, I always love seeing at the very end of the credits, like, hey, my friend worked on this movie. And wait, there's her name. She's a rotoscoper, one of the 60 people from this one company doing, like, 30 minutes of the film. So it's always fun, like, thinking about, like, all these people that do other jobs to it, too. But it takes a lot of people to get a movie off the ground completely.
Yeah. And I mean, look, I'm guilty, too. It's not like I pay attention to, like, the technical awards that are given out at award shows. It's like, oh, those are the boring ones. Those are the boring ones. They shouldn't be. But
some of them don't even, you know, get televised.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of them don't get televised.
But funny story about when I go and see movies at the cinema. So ever since I did animation at university and got a better respect for what, like, how many people like needed to bring a film to life, even before Marvel's whole thing with putting a post credit scene in to like keep people around to like give extra stuff, whatever, I would always sit through the credits all the way to the end every single time, because I feel like if I've just sat and watched that whole movie, I can give an extra 5 minutes to see every single person's name go by that worked on that film. And even then, not every single person who's involved in bringing the film to life gets on the credits, because you have to do a certain amount of work to be credited for it. So you may spend a lot of time working on that film and still not get on the credits. But I feel like, yeah, I'm that person that it doesn't matter what film it is, whether there's a post-credit scene or not. I sit through the whole credits every single time. I have ever since I've been at university. So,
aw, that's great.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. Like, I sit through the credits, maybe partially because one of my friends who I worked with at Nickelodeon, she's moved on to be a, if she's listening, hi, Aisling. You know, it's basically she's a stereo conversion. So basically anyone who didn't shoot in 3D, she goes in and makes a movie 3D. So she's worked on some big movies, a lot of the Marvel ones. SpongeBob was probably her most recent one. But it's one of those things where watching her name go through and like seeing it, it's really cool because, you know, I know her, but at the same time, it's like she's one of 60 names that are in there at the very end. I'm like, man, it's almost kind of insignificant that she worked on it, but it's cool to know that she was there.
Yeah.
So, you know,
can I go on like a tangent for a second? Do you know what it was for me that like shook my entire worldview of all this? It wasn't like school or anything. It was watching the one behind the scenes production thing that they had on the Friends DVDs, which was like the beginning of season 5 or 6 or something. And that was really like, they literally brought the actors in at like the last minute of the documentary. And I was like, whoa, like it just blew my mind how much effort was put in. Like, you know about it. You know it must happen, but you don't understand the specifics of it until you like start to learn and think about it.
Yeah, there's a lot there. So, all right. Well, moving on. This is probably my favorite news story before we move into our spotlight topic of the droids this week is John Boyega. So on Instagram, I saw this retweeted, shared, Facebooked, Reddit, everywhere with this. John Boyega visited a children's hospital as Finn. And one, it's just awesome, like just seeing the pictures and everything, but he stayed in character the whole time and the kids were just completely enamored with him. It was awesome. I'm assuming you guys all saw the pictures.
Yes.
Oh.
The bit that got me was the one that he posted up with the little girl where she asks him like, where's Rey? And he was like, I don't know, I got beat by Kylo and I don't remember anything. And she's like, okay, I'll be your Rey today. And he's like, okay, lead the way. And he's got this picture of her holding his hand. And I like died, genuinely died at that
picture. I'm looking at that picture and I have the dumbest grin on my face because it is so adorable and cute. So yeah, no, I agree. And it's... we've seen celebrities do this type of thing before, but I think that, you know, this is special. Star Wars has always done stuff like this with the 501st going in Stormtrooper and Vader costumes, and, you know, this is Finn. Like, not just a person as a Stormtrooper, this is actually Finn from the new movie coming to, you know, see these kids. And it was it the Royal London Hospital?
Yeah.
And that's just such a cool experience for these kids, and also for him just to be able to reach out and do stuff like this.
Yeah, it also, I think the particular kid, like, could have just had John to himself. Like, he could have just hung out with John, but he wanted to give presents to the other kids with Finn, and that's just, like, so amazingly sweet. And, you know, speaking of like how it fits into Star Wars, I think not in any way that like John Boyega wouldn't have done this anyway, but like Mark Hamill has like set such a good example for them, and just like in terms of being generous with your time and what your character and what you mean to other people, it's just like really nice to see that has continued in the new generation.
Oh yeah. It's just awesome.
I'm not welling up.
No, don't.
I know. I'm not going through the pictures again. It's awesome. Like, it makes me happy that I like this fandom and he's part of the fandom. You know.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Michal. The second you started going, oh, Mark Hamill set such a good example, I'm like, oh no, I'm gonna cry.
He does though. Like he does. He's done this for years, and like, oh, it's reported now because he's like back in the news. But like, people didn't care before, you know. I mean, obviously the people who were receiving, you know, that were did do, but like, I don't know. It's just, it's nice to know that there's obviously, you know, Star Wars is a property and there's a lot of, it's a capitalist thing and all that, but it's really nice to know that there is genuine, like, plain old goodness that comes out of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, and shout out to Daisy Ridley for giving that guy, like, the best, like, prom invitation rejection ever, because that was just the best. Did you guys see that?
That was on Instagram, or I'm trying to remember where I saw it.
Instagram, yeah.
I missed that.
Yeah, some guy, like, it made a video inviting her to his prom, or do you call it a prom in England? I don't know if... that's what it is.
It's kind of like a prom. We don't have, like, prom the way you guys have it. And I say you guys as if I actually know what prom is like. I know what prom is like based on, like, American high school movies I've watched.
Well, I went to an all-girls school, so I don't know from prom either. But, it was formal. She said, thank you so much for that brilliant invite to your formal. Unfortunately, I'm... something in an intense I'm locked in an intense staring competition with Luke Skywalker somewhere in the middle of the galaxy, so won't be able to make it. Let me know how it goes. Have fun, Daisy/Ray. And it's just like, again, these things that, like, they don't have to do, yeah, you know, but are just so nice.
I love this cast so goddamn much.
All this cast have done just great things, I think. Anyway, moving on to our spotlight topic this week. We're going to be talking about the droids, R2-D2, C-3PO, and the newcomer, BB-8. So I do want to focus on R2-D2 and C-3PO, at least at the start, because they really are what we are introduced to in the original films. And then obviously they're there in the prequels. And then now we have the two of them and BB-8 in The Force Awakens. Obviously more BB-8 than the other two. But let's just start from the very beginning when we first introduced them to A New Hope. We were supposed to have Eric on this show this week, but he unfortunately couldn't make it because of work. But when people mention R2-D2 and C-3PO, the first thought that comes to at least Eric's mind, and I'll agree, I've heard this before too, is they're the comic relief. And maybe especially during, like, the prequel trilogy after they kind of got rid of Jar Jar Binks. But they also did the same thing in New Hope. They were also the kind of the comic relief, and they kind of set the stage for the entire series, because the entire first 30 minutes of A New Hope is essentially them, and you can't even understand one of them. What do you guys think about how R2-D2 and C-3PO interact in A New Hope?
I mean, I love their interactions a lot, but then again, like, a lot of what we get of their interactions is just what we can try and ascertain from C-3PO as to what R2-D2 is actually saying. But I like to imagine the R2-D2 is just like a sass bucket and just goes around sassing everyone. So, I don't know. I really enjoy it. There's something about them that makes it, or made it really easy, especially when I was a lot younger, as like a gateway into it. Like, to be able to see, even though they're droids, like, they were the easy way to, like, get grounded in that story a little bit. Like, it was really easy because they were just, like, almost normal. They're kind of like what you would expect, like, the human character in other, like, amazing out of this world stories to be like. Like, they're kind of your way in and your way of understanding it. So, I don't know, I really, really love the two of them. And I always have. R2-D2 especially. I used to have a lot of R2-D2 stuff when I was a kid. Like, I absolutely loved it. I actually have, I'll try and take a picture of it and put it up on my Instagram. I have this little, it's like a Hoover. I don't know. Do you call them Hoovers? Do you call them vacuum cleaners? I don't know. Okay. Yeah. It's like a little desk one, though. And you can clean, like, crumbs and dust off your desk using it. It's stupidly adorable. But, Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily say that they're entirely comic relief, though, because I think in they do bring a certain, like, almost levity to the series, but also there's something about C-3PO's, like, anxiety, especially going back and watching it now. You kind of think, yeah, actually, if you were kind of just a normal person thrown into this situation, you'd probably react a little bit like that as well.
Well, and I love that, because I feel like they introduce us to the entire series, starting from A New Hope, and I think C-3PO especially, he's kind of like us inside that film. Like, he kind of reacts the way we almost would, and he also over explains certain things that might be a little bit more complicated to think about. But going back to you talking about R2-D2 just being a sass bucket, I just linked a photo that's been around on the internet for a while, but it says it's the most vulgar character of all time. They beeped out every single word he said, and it's a picture of R2-D2. So and I agree, like, and kind of going back to Mikhail's story of, like, her dad explaining Star Wars and C-3PO and R2-D2, how, like, you know what he's saying, but you don't. I love that they didn't give something where, like, oh, he actually has a readout that you can read what he's saying or something. Like, he has his own language with beeps and bloops, and I think that's probably one of the reasons I also love BB-8 the way I do, too. It's just, like, the tones give you so much, have so much character to them, and you can just imagine what they're saying, and you kind of put your own spin on these guys. I definitely am a big fan of R2 and C-3PO, especially how they kind of guide us through the story of A New Hope.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I always felt for 3PO like he was always someone I really related to, just like being very anxious about these situations. And it wasn't, I guess, until I recently rewatched the movies that I realized he can be pretty annoying, and kind of selfish and stuff. But I still kind of felt for him. And I forgot that in Empire, he is hilarious. Funny. It's like, it's ridiculous, like, such also modern humor with, like, the beats going right, and, like, I don't know, I love it so much. But yeah, I'm not a huge I don't put a ton of stock in necessarily everything George Lucas says, but I do like, I think he's said this, that, like, R2-D2 and C-3PO are sort of like the Greek chorus of the Star Wars films. And I like that idea a lot, because I think it's kind of a graceful, like, add-on, like an interesting incarnation of that idea in this kind of sci-fi fantasy story.
No, I agree completely. And I think it's interesting, especially A New Hope, because, it's interesting that you mentioned about George Lucas and kind of taking stock in what he says, because in A New Hope, obviously, in hindsight, we know kind of what happened in the prequels now in hindsight, but there's no reference to any of them. A good example is when Owen Lars goes to purchase R2-D2 and C-3PO, why didn't he recognize either of them? Owen Lars technically owned C-3PO for a while, and he met R2 on Tatooine when Anakin and Padme were there.
I mean, I have a theory about this.
Go ahead.
I mean, let's be real. 3PO droids are pretty damn common in the universe to start with. So you see them a lot in, like, the background in the original trilogy and the prequels. Like, they are there a lot. And you think about when he actually owned them, and then even then, it's not, he didn't necessarily own them. It was just like 3PO was kind of just there while he was still living with Shmi, and but you also think about how he looked after, like, Anakin built him, and then he got a new gold casing that made him look exactly like other 3PO droids. But when you think back to A New Hope, when he actually sees a 3PO for the first time, 3PO never actually gives him his designation C-3PO at all. Like, Owen doesn't hear him say what his designation is at all in the entire thing. So it's entirely plausible that he wouldn't recognize a 3PO droid from another 3PO droid. In fact, you see the way that he treats droids in general, like, it's so unlike characters like Luke and characters like Poe Dameron, where they actually genuinely care about these droids, about their welfare, about actually treating them like
humans, almost like, right?
Other people.
Yeah, like equals, Owen, almost, if you will.
Yeah, but Owen just doesn't give a crap. Like, he just sees them as objects. And so the fact that he doesn't or didn't have any stock in actually recognizing one 3PO droid from another, even though technically C-3PO's innards aren't the same as a standard 3PO droid, like, I don't think he had enough emotional investment in C-3PO as a droid and as something that he potentially owned or was in contact with that many years ago to actually know that it would be the same one. So
I'll buy that.
I know why.
Uh-oh.
I know why.
All right, we have the answer.
His memory was wiped, just like 3PO's. There you go.
Right? Just like Rey's memory, right? That's why she doesn't know that she's the daughter of Luke Skywalker. Moving on past that, though.
Thank you. High five. She is obviously the daughter of Luke Skywalker.
Thank you. Yeah, I like that. All right, see, I like this one. Like, there we go. Everyone's arguing with me. Always and always and forever. Okay. Yes. But yeah, you know, like, I get it. You know, there could be something else going on there. But at the same time, if their memory is wiped, you know, Eric also sent me questions about, you know, the ethics of wiping their memory. So we know that the droids do pick up their own personality. We see it in BB-8. We see it in R2-D2. Heck, we see it in the worrisome that is C-3PO. And other droids that we've seen on screen, they all have their own personality.
Chopper.
Yeah, Chopper in Rebels, right? You know, so we see this all the time. And even, you know, the Seven Sisters droids, they all have their own personality of kind of being cold and whatever. But so they all have their own personalities and things. So is it wrong or ethically wrong to wipe them? They are a droid, so they're a thing, but they have. But are they sentient? Are they not sentient completely? You know, what do you guys think about wiping their memory?
I mean, it's the same as, like, what kind of emotional reaction did you have in respect to, like, the cantina, where they're like, we don't serve your kind here kind of thing. Like, it's kind of that same sort of emotional reaction that you would have to that. Like, when you look at them, do you see something sentient or do you see another object? So I guess it's a much deeper conversation. I guess it does come down to how you view droids. Like, you know, there's that whole obsession with gendering them as well and trying to make sense of them in our own binary, our own gender binary and stuff like that, and trying to treat them exactly like we would with other people. But it's kind of where it's that whole AI thing, the AI debate as well, that you see with, like, stuff like, I don't know if you've seen Ex Machina and a load of, like, other films like iRobot and that kind of thing. It's that same ethical debate that we have across all of those films. So I guess it depends on where you personally fall on that. And you see it a little bit within the scope of the Star Wars universe itself as well. Like I was saying, you know, you get characters like Owen Lars who treat them as objects to be able to get, like, jobs done and buying them and so on. But then you get characters like Luke and Poe who treat them with respect and as equals. So I guess personally for me, I don't think wiping their memory is ethical the same way I don't think wiping actual people's memories are ethical, even if the reasoning is there in respect to, like, for example, potentially Rey's memory getting wiped to protect her and so on. I mean, I fall on the side of, like, I don't think it's ethical to wipe their memories because they have such distinct personalities that you kind of, it's hard to know whether those personalities are programmed in or whether they're things that they've developed themselves. Like, it's very difficult because we don't actually know within the text if that's how it's come about. So I don't know. I guess it's a big personal debate, really, isn't it? It's the same with any AI debate.
No, I agree. And to an extent, you know, but at the same time, you know, they're droids, they're robots. Are they kind of like a really advanced iPhone or something like that that's picked up a bug where every time you open your camera, you have to open up twice or something? You know, and that's why you wipe it so that way it doesn't have the problem. You know, I see both sides of this, and I agree. I think the cantina scene is probably the best one. It's like, you're droids here. We don't serve their kind. Well, obviously, they're not going to serve alcohol or drinks to a droid, but they might have, you know, an oil bath. But, you know, we see C-3PO enjoy that. So, it's interesting when you think about, you know, if they have a soul, are they sentient? You know, I almost kind of see it like the whole animal thing debate right now, and I don't want to pick a side or anything, but I have cats and I've had dogs and pets and stuff. But, you know, we see those animals as sentient enough to on our loyalty and stuff, but at the same time, like, do we look at bugs the same way? I know a lot of people see a spider, they freak out and want to smash it, but it's like, hey, it's still life. You know, it's, you know, and I don't want to get too deep into that type of conversation, but I can definitely see C-3PO and RTD2 have their own personalities, and I think the personality evolves probably from not wiping their memory.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated because, you know, I guess you could sort of judge animals by, like, the complexity of their, you know, brains and whatever, but, like, cyborg circuitry is probably more advanced than human brain capacity, at least for some of them, you know. So it's a weird, sticky topic, but I guess what holds me up is that we're not sure really that all droids are like this. Like, there are plenty of other droids that aren't, you know, this special, right? Like, all the other ones that get blown off of Padme's ship and in the beginning of Phantom Menace, you know, it's just like, bye! Like, it doesn't matter. And then, like, R2 manages to make it, so he gets a commendation, like a person, even though, like, they didn't, it's not like they're memorializing those other droids. So I tend to think that, like, the droids we know well are somewhat anomalous. You know, they're not quite as, like, maybe there's a reason why Owen Lars thinks of droids like tools, because in his experience, they are tools. So, I mean, not just, like, not like C-3PO is like a tool, but, like, you know what I mean.
Well, that's interesting, because, you know, when you think about it this way, is maybe I'm thinking R2-D2 is, like, a loyal friend, you know, a pet, like a dog, right? Like, to Luke Skywalker, and he's always there, and he gets sad. That's why he turns off in Force Awakens when Luke goes away. And again, that's super simplifying the whole thing, right?
Sad beep.
Exactly, right? But at the same time, you know, if you think of, like, a horse or something like that, you know, Owen Lars can definitely see that as a tool to for his farm, you know, and that's why he sees 3PO and R2-D2 the way he does, because they're just a added thing for his farm. Now, living in Kentucky, I do know a few people who own horses, and that's what they do. And I definitely have heard people, you know, just have a conversation about, like, oh, they're just horses, they're breeding them, and that's it. On the flip side, I know their kids or other people who are like, oh no, this horse's name is Annabelle, and, like, they have a connection to it. And so I think it's kind of one of those things where whether you or the person that is interacting with them can actually get that interaction, or get that connection with them. So maybe it's not ethical, but more your perspective, maybe, of whether it's right or wrong to wipe their memory. But I definitely think C-3PO's memory had been wiped at some point, just because he doesn't remember anything before his last mission with Captain Antilles, whereas R2...
Well, isn't that what they say in the end of
Revenge of the Sith? Yeah, they do say wipe his memory, but I don't think...
I think Bail Organa says it.
Yeah, Bail says to wipe it, but I don't know if it's been wiped again since then. Well, actually, no, he does, because Bail wipes it, and then he says, Captain Antilles, this is your new droid, and he gives it, you know, and he gives it C-3PO to him. But I don't think R2's was ever wiped. Maybe he just knows it all.
Yeah. Well, I guess it makes sense to, if you're in the rebellion, to like wipe a droid like 3PO who can talk, you know, and like actually give away your secrets.
Yeah, 3PO, I would be I'd be very surprised if he could hold it to torture much. Whereas I think R2 could. Moving
right,
on.
That's another weird scene, right? Like in Jabba's palace, they're torturing a droid, and it's like, why does it have pain sensors? What does that mean? Like, it's very strange.
That's a good one. In Return of the Jedi, you know, we have a droid being tortured, and C-3PO actually shows fear from it. So obviously they're sentient enough to recognize that being destroyed or shut down or with a restraining bolt are all things that they don't want. So it's just interesting to kind of see how these characters are driven in the Star Wars universe and how they're treated. But I do want to move on to BB-8 a little bit. So we're introduced to BB-8 in The Force Awakens. And literally within the first 30 seconds, you know, I don't have the movie to pull it back up exactly, but the first 30 seconds of BB-8 on screen, I fell in love with him, at least personally here with me. And I was a little worried because, like, all the BB-8 merchandise coming out, he wasn't R2-D2. You know, I know why they were playing down R2 in the role and everything. But at the same time, it's like I was hoping I wouldn't not like him. And sure enough, he did exactly what I was hoping for. I fell in love with, you know, BB-8. And I think the voice of BB-8 is exactly what I would expect and hope for that type of character.
I mean, I fell in love with BB-8. In the 88-second trailer. So I can't really, I guess, talk about expectations because ever since I saw that, I was like, that, mine, he's mine. Yeah.
Well, to be honest with you, I liked him in the trailers and everything, and I was hoping for it. But you just don't, you know, you just don't know. I think I like to liken BB-8 to when I was telling people, like, why I was worried. Is, have you ever seen Fanboys, the scene with Seth Rogen, and he talks about how awesome Jar Jar Binks is going to be before the movie comes out?
Oh my god!
So I need to find this, and I need to link it. I need to link it to everyone, because this is probably one of the best scenes about how, like, high expectations can just let you down. Like, my wife did not even, she's like, no, don't let me, she didn't see any of the trailers for The Force Awakens. She's a big Star Wars fan. That's actually where I met her, was at Celebration 3 at a Star Wars convention. But it's one of those things where she just absolutely refused. Like, I would watch them, like, you gotta watch this. Like, no, she'd walk out of the room, like, when I throw it up on the TV or something. Like, she just refused to, because she didn't want to get any expectations for it. So with BB-8, I'm like, he looks so cool. Like, I love this droid, but I didn't want it to be like a Jar Jar Binks, where everything we saw before the Phantom Menace, if you remember back then, because I know you were new to it, was like, it was, he was going to be the cool character. Like, I remember the cursor, like, or somebody who's kind of funny, and you see him do the flip in the air, jump into the water, and everything. It was like, I'm like, this is going to be really cool. And then he turns out to be the character that I still like Jar Jar to an extent a little bit, but he was the annoying character that he turned out to be. So I was thoroughly happy with the way BB-8 turned out. He was not annoying. It was not something that let me down. He was as awesome as I had hoped he'd be.
I remember when we first saw, like, BB-8 and people started, like, losing their crap. Like, they were losing their minds over this little droid on social media everywhere, and someone came out and did a comic which basically revealed BB-8 as, like, the big bad of the whole thing. And I remember seeing that and being like, I know that it's not going to happen, but what if?
Darth
BB-8.
I wasn't really worried about, like, I guess part of the reason I was confident in that was because I mean, like, so what are you going to lose? Like, okay, so he's not as cool. He's not as cute as he looks in the commercials, you know, like he isn't, that's basically the whole of him. It turns out he had a lot more going for him. But, like, there was very little to lose there. For me, the risk was, like, considering, like, a character that I really started to love before the movie, which I generally try not to do, was Rey, because I just fell in love with Rey and, like, bought her Funko, like, as soon as I could, and was like, this is bad. What if I hate her? This is not good. And it turned out to love her. But I guess, like, you know, a character like BB-8, there was so little that could go wrong for me. Although maybe if I had been burned to that extent by by The Phantom Menace, I would have been more wary. But I don't know. It was just, like, it was kind of great to be part of that, like, I guess, and everything else that we saw, like, moving into the movie, right? Like, when he came out at Celebration, like, I wasn't there, but I saw the movie, the video of it. And, like, everyone went nuts, and he was, like, moving around, beeping. And it's like, what could go wrong with this guy? Like, yeah, I mean, at that point, I still thought he was a she, but...
Yeah, well...
Speaking of gender droids.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's interesting. When they actually showed him Will out at Celebration, I think that put a lot of people at ease, too. Just because I think it's also because of the prequels. You know, we saw C-3PO in The Phantom Menace be CGI, because he didn't have the outer casing, so he was all CGI. We saw Yoda be all CGI. We saw a lot of overuse of CGI in the prequels, even though J.J. Abrams said we were going to do more practical stuff. Seeing an actual BB-8 droid was kind of nice to see that, and I think it reassured a lot of people, and I think that's why people went crazy for it.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, certainly the Star Wars fandom, like, for better or for worse, like, whatever you think about the prequels, have experienced a very strong cultural backlash. So certainly I you know, I mean, I don't like the prequels, but I know that there are people out there who do. So it's understandable, for sure. It's just, like, I don't know, for me, like, BB-8 was just instantly... And I remember listening to podcasts about it, and people were like, what is that Bali thing? Like, oh my gosh, they're going to make us think this thing is cute. And I was, like, sitting there going, he is cute. What are you talking about? He's so cute.
I bought that Spiro droid. Like,
I have it too. Yes, I have it too.
I don't have it yet. I want it.
It's awesome.
It's so great, Mikal. Seriously. Like, driving it around with my phone and making it follow me and beep everywhere is, like, the highlight of my day sometimes. Like, if I'm
feel loved.
I do feel loved, because even when BB-8 sits in the little charging thing, and you can sometimes get it to move around and beep at you even when it's in the little charging station, it's so cute.
Yeah, mine sits on my desk for the most part, because when I get it out, my cats, I have three of them sitting around the house, they love to chase BB-8 around. And I think if only BB-8 was the real size, they wouldn't be doing that. But, no, I'm like, nah, I wish I had a bigger one. But, yeah, you know, I think... And BB-8 was interesting, because he was also... We saw the same dynamic between C-3PO and R2-D2 in A New Hope. But we see the same thing between Rey and BB-8. You know, we don't understand what BB-8's saying, but we see her response to it. And they drive a good chunk of the beginning of the film... after BB-8 runs away, when Poe gets, you know, captured. And it's just, it's really interesting seeing that they kind of almost, you know, obviously people will say Force Awakens is so much like A New Hope, and it's a mirror image, but it kind of is in a way that we have BB-8 and Rey having this one-sided conversation. We're literally just making up what BB-8 says. And it's, I think I like that we don't have the actual words there. You know, we're making up what he's saying, and we can kind of get the gist of it just from the one-sided conversation and the tones of him beeping.
Well, yeah, I mean, that goes back to, you know, my argument, I guess, about the Han Solo thing, just that, like, ambiguity is good in stories, you know? I'm in a creative writing program now, and my professor was talking about ambiguity, and he was like, I love ambiguity, so I burst in, or do you? And, you know, so I don't know if that's, like, it's just on my mind, but it's a very strong kind of, like, sophisticated type of storytelling that you don't have to know all the answers, and you can make, I mean, it's a debate online, right? Is BB-8 actually, like, giving the thumbs up or the finger when he's,
yes,
to you know, Finn, right? And it never occurred to me that it was the finger until, like, some of my friends were like, so BB-8 gave the finger, and I was like, oh.
It's totally a thumbs up. I saw it as a thumbs up.
But I think it's also, like, your perspective, too. You know, like, someone says something, and if your mind goes to one area where someone else's, you know, I like to say, it's like, did your mind go to the gutter for this? You know, it's the same thing. You know, without saying anything and alluding to anything bad, this is kind of a PG you know, podcast still. But, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, is it the thumbs up or finger? I think it's just what your perspective was on it. And I think taking your perspective into these characters, again, going back to is it ethically wrong? Are they sentient or not? I think it's just your perspective of how you've treated them, how you interacted with them. And to me, like, I was always like, BBA is super happy, cheery, and it's definitely a thumbs up where it's like, cool. And I think it's also, I'm going to say it's a thumbs up just because, you know, Finn kind of gives them a thumbs up afterwards also, so I don't know. That's just my opinion on that one.
Yeah, I see it as a thumbs up as well. Like I always did. Like Michal, it didn't even occur to me that it could have been the finger. Like, I didn't even cross my mind. The very many times that I saw that in the cinema, it did not even occur to me once that could be a thing.
Yeah, I also think it's the thumb, but I like the people interpret it in other ways. Again, that's kind of like a strength of that storytelling. But I mean, come on, like maybe just like knocking over that, was it Finn or like
it was, you know, Finn
to, oh my gosh,
just knocking into him on his way to Poe. Oh. And just be basically, but the thing is that this is the funny thing, is that BB-8 didn't have to knock into Finn in that scene. Like, there was so much space in that hangar to be able to get to Poe. Like, there was so much space. He didn't have to run into Finn. He did it on purpose. Like, he rams into his legs on the way to Poe. And I just think that's absolutely hilarious.
Well, that's his personality. He's like, you know, because, well, here's the thing. Finn is running towards Poe also. Because, like, you know, they got the bromance going. He's like, yeah. And then, but you know, maybe BB-8's just a little jealous. He's like, no, he's my buddy first. So I definitely feel like, you know, I definitely see, especially since that, like, you know, Finn's wearing Poe's jacket, you know, he's like, I gotta see him first. So I definitely think it's an interesting dynamic between BB-8 and the rest of the characters, because obviously Poe loves him, Finn loves him, and also Rey loves him just because, you know, she didn't sell him for a bunch of portions. So,
well, what I love about that is just that it's kind of Rey's like awareness that he doesn't belong to her, you know. I mean, there definitely is like an emotional connection there too, but it's also like, I feel like Rey growing up like that would have a very strong sense of like mine, not mine, you know, and that she honors that in the face of such temptation is really beautiful.
Okay. No, I like it. I like it really beautiful. I just don't know.
If I have the opportunity to talk about Rey, I will talk about Rey.
No, that's fine.
I don't know. I think like one of my favorite moments in like all of The Force Awakens is when Finn and BB-8, well, Finn's trying to like get BB-8 to go along with his story that he's part of the resistance, and then he goes, "Droid, please." I'm like, every single time I see that scene, I crack the hell up. Like, it's still one of my favorite parts. Just that whole scene of them kind of, like, Finn not really understanding what BB-8 is saying, and BB-8 beeping and just messing with him. Like, this is Poe Dameron's droid, and we know that Poe Dameron also sasses people like crazy, because we see the so who talks first? Do you talk first? Do I talk first? Kind of thing. Like, if that's your master, if that's the person that you spend, like, all of your time with, that's gonna rub off on you, that kind of sassing personality. So, I don't know, I just really love that scene so much. It's like, every single time, that scene does not get old for me. I think it's really great. And just, droid please is like one of my favorite lines in all of The Force Awakens. I absolutely love it. I really want to watch it again now.
We'll watch it. You know, you can watch it on the first in digital. I may or may not have purchased it on iTunes also. So yeah,
I'm gonna wait.
And I have a pre-order with the Target, so I wait to the fifth too, but I can't wait that long.
I've ordered both. I mean, you tell me, I saw The Force Awakens in like double digits in the cinema, so ordering it twice was kind of like just that kind of progression of, well, It was still in the cinema up until, like, a couple of weeks ago, I think it was. I was like, I could order it twice, or I could go and see it now. I was like, I'll order it twice.
I only saw it twice. I haven't seen it since a little later in December, and I'm, like, ashamed of myself, but...
It had a genuine problem.
Yeah, and it was on the airplane. I went to California recently. It was on the airplane, but I had too much work to do.
Oh, no.
So upset, I know.
Yeah, if we talking of, like, obsessive personalities and having to see things, like, for example, I'm seeing Civil War twice in the same day. I'm not even kidding. I'm seeing it at midnight on the 29th when it comes out. I'm seeing it again on the 29th at 7 p.m.
Wow.
Yeah. I saw
Star Wars twice that first day too.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I guess it was, I saw it on Thursday and then I saw it Friday. So I saw it 2 days apart, but it was less than 24 hours, if you will.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I definitely think, you know, we're excited to see more of BB-8 as he goes on to the episode 8 and 9.
I'm seriously looking forward to seeing him in the Poe Dameron comic when that comes out. Oh my god, some of the covers for that comic with BB-8 on it are absolutely adorable as well. Like, they look so damn cute. But I'm actually really looking forward to seeing more of BB-8 in that as well, because there's actually a lot more that they can do with that prior to what we know in The Force Awakens. So I'm super excited to see that and what they do with it.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that. So thank you, everybody, for listening to this week's episode of Resistance Radio. My name is Mikey.
I'm Danya.
And I'm Michal.
And we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody.
Force be with you.